Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can follow me on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X at JWright929. You can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can stream us on the Odyssey app, the TuneIn app, and the iHeartRadio app. We are all there streaming live. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How's it going?
Oh, it goes, my friend. It indeed goes. So let's give you a little bit of an update of where we are. Cobb is having to do a CBS Sports HQ hit, so it's going to be about 10 minutes before he joins the program. However, we will get things kicked off with the Memphis Tigers. Last night, the season finally comes to an end. 81-69, I believe, was the final. There was a chance to make it a 10-point game, but there was a missed layup late. I think it was 81-69. Let me double-check. Yep, 81-69.
Nice.
More importantly, nicely done, Penny Hardaway spoke afterwards because, let's be clear, that's the most important aspect of where we move from here, because I did not have visions of them winning 5 games in 5 days. So I'm going to lift a column from my old boss, Neil McCready. He has a comment, or he has a column where he'll take what can usually be a mundane press conference, typically with a football coach. He started, I believe, with Lane Kiffin. What he said, what he meant. Because when you are in these settings, there are certain things that you can say that you're having to allow your audience to read between the lines. So Penny Hardaway spoke for about 10 minutes after yesterday's game. I have found 4 clips or exchanges, if you will, that I want to discuss. And we'll talk about what he said, what he actually meant. Then we are going to take your phone calls during the next segment. You're going to get your opportunity to say what you mean about the Memphis Tigers. So we'll let Penny say it. We'll offer our thoughts on what he said. Then we'll let you talk about it as well. We'll get into the list to start our number 2. Shout out to all the Italian Americans. George, you are one of?
I am one of. They were balling last night.
Maybe they're just a wagon.
They might be.
Maybe they are just a wagon.
Is it the espresso? We will find out.
Certainly, there's pop in the bat. And there has been all tournament long, so we'll get into that. Also, the Big Ten has asked the NCAA to pause tampering inquiries. We'll get Cobb's thoughts on what he thinks that the actual intent is there. We also have a loaded slate of college hoops going on. And, in fact, the 31-0 team is in jeopardy. Miami of Ohio is in the quarterfinals of the MAC championship. They're in an absolute dogfight with Frank Martin's UMass Minutemen. Currently, they are at the free throw line trailing by 3 with 9 seconds left, and they hit the first. So we'll talk about that as well as all the other college basketball action, coaching carousel moves. We'll get Cobb's thoughts on what he thinks are the best jobs that are going to be available, what type of movement we're going to see, because it also does not appear that we will see movement at this job here at the University of Memphis. But a couple of things about last night before we get into what he said, what he meant. I could be missing an obvious example. George, I do not remember a game starting in college basketball 1-0 before the tip-off. So
your guess is as good as mine.
I've obviously seen this at youth basketball. I think at certain points, like when I was in charge with the book for like my brother's teams, I think I got the numbers wrong on the when you send the book.
Right.
I think in high school it just starts with a tech.
That's what last night was it?
But I think it's a 2-shot. Last night, I think it was a 1-shot technical, wasn't it?
Yes, it was 1-0.
So a procedural technical, because I don't think he hit 1 of 2. I think he just got 1 shot. Because I remember looking up, we're eating dinner, and I look up and I'm watching the graphic says 1-0, and they're getting ready to tip it off. I was like, that can't be right. And then I immediately went to Twitter and Munns let us know. No, indeed, that is exactly what happened. The game started with a technical free throw, 1-0. And I felt like that kind of set the tone for the evening.
I was about to say, was that not just so emblematic of how the rest of the night went, how so much of the season has already gone? Just,
I mean, listen, there are lots of jokes you could make. It's like, listen, Penny gets confused of even who he's starting that night. So reportedly,
but still, man,
the starters were turned in late.
I don't know how, because Munns had the starters like 2 hours before tip.
Well, the other thing I was thinking about, like in a conference tournament setting where you have games happening all the time, like, did it not get to the booth? So obviously the Tigers last night were the first men's game, but they had women's games
prior.
But also, isn't that the in-between shift? You know, when they clear it out?
Yeah. Do they not have, like, is the American doing men's and women's tournament at the same location?
Yes.
I think
it's all at the same arena.
Okay.
I think it's all at Legacy Arena. I think that was part of how they wanted to have, like, they bid it out wanting to have both at both locations, I think, timed up fairly similarly to cut down on travel costs.
Right. Makes sense. That's fair.
So, game starts 1-0. And I don't know. Having watched it, I think you can make the argument, well, the Tigers have not been the defensive team all year. They've had a lot of problems. But really, it just kind of came down to me. Both teams made 22 shots, and Tulane was 14 of 34 from three, while Memphis was 5 of 22. And there's your disparity. And it felt like when the Tigers got behind, they started pressing. And that's all she wrote. And it was a game that was not unfamiliar to anyone that has watched the basketball team all year. So, thus, the season finally ends. And I was way more interested in what Penny would say when the season finally ended rather than how it ended. Because whether it would have ended against Charlotte tomorrow, whether it would have ended against UAB on Friday, whether it would have ended against South Florida on Saturday, I did not expect this team to get all the way to Sunday, win 5 games in 5 days. I thought they could knock off somebody.
I thought this game was perfectly winnable. I mean, we just saw it, what, 3 days ago?
Yeah, and, you know, Munns even pointed out it did look like two teams that had kind of unloaded the clip. What I actually kind of thought it looked like was more of, you'll see it more in the NBA playoffs, like in the middle of a series when both teams kind of know what the other team's doing.
Yeah.
It feels kind of, I don't know, lifeless is right at first. Like, it's always tough to say whether or not a game feels lifeless in these type of settings because there's just no atmosphere.
Right, like, because it truly is like a neutral site game. It's so early in the conference tournament. Like, the crowd's either not there at all, or it's pretty, like you said.
It's pretty stale.
Stale. My go-to there is flat.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
They started out completely flat, and is it not just like the perfect kind of letdown for the letdown of the year that it was in general?
I just felt like it's a game that you've seen before where,
yeah,
like, there was nothing like aggressively bad. This isn't a game where like the Tigers had 20 turnovers, but they did not do much offensively and they could not stop Rowan Brumbaugh.
Again.
Correct. I think.
Well, actually, no, ever. They haven't yet.
I think they held him to 27 in the first game, 31 on Sunday, and then last night he had 35. So they had the best player and the best scorer on the floor. Memphis did not have any answer, and here we are. So now we go to the post-game press conference. And so I have isolated 4 clips that I want to discuss. And we'll start first with, and these were not taken like chronologically from the press conference, because I think actually the first clip might have been one of the last questions asked. But it's kind of how I would say, like, this is how I would order it in terms of what interests me. So the very first clip, is Penny Hardaway on how he views this season. Here's what he said.
Any other way. I mean, we didn't do what we needed to do. We failed. But again, you can come back from failure. There's been a lot of teams that have gone through this year more than any, and I'm the head of that failure. Couldn't get the guys to really believe in and buy in every single game. We worked hard. We put guys in position, and then the guys have to go out there and take over from there because we can't go on the court. But it was a failed season. Everything that you said is true. The worst record, 7-game losing streak, a couple 4-game losing streaks. It was not a fun year when you're used to winning and when you're used to taking care of non-conference scheduling and playing well in the conference. It just was a weird year.
So, not a ton of deflection. You know, I mean, one of the themes throughout the press conference was lack of buy-in, but no duh. It's a 13-19 basketball team. There was clearly not buy-in. But I think the thing that I took away from this, so if we're going to say what he actually said, because I don't think there was a whole lot of interpretation.
No.
But what I would say is I think he was surprised. And I think he was surprised that they did not handle the non-conference in the way that they did. Mm-hmm. And then we saw it snowball. Because we've talked about on the show, when you're going to schedule in the way that Memphis does, particularly when your schedule is so front-loaded with all of your difficult, top-notch games early, if it doesn't go well, how do you get it back on the rails? And we haven't really had an experience, or we haven't really had a season where they've actually experienced that. Like, I thought this was a legitimate concern last year, but they had such a phenomenal non-conference that they were able to keep it rolling. And in the year prior, a very good non-conference. Now, it turned out that maybe some of the games that they won ended up maybe being paper wins more than, like,
the ones that aged pretty poorly throughout the rest of the season.
But that was a good basketball team that absolutely collapsed.
Yep.
And so we saw the kind of the opposite of, like, whoa, 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 wait.
I thought this team was actually kind of good.
Correct.
And then it turned out.
Correct. And so I do think, I think what he was meaning by that was he did not anticipate the non-conference impacting the entire season the way that it did. And I think that what we saw is they just were never to get it. They were never able to get it back on the rails.
Right. And for what it's worth as well, we pointed that out at the time.
Yep.
When the non-conference slate for this team went as poorly as it did, and this to me is not including the Utah State game as where that landed on the calendar. I mean, we talked about it at that time. We're like, well, we don't know really what this team fully is yet. We're not sure if the team knows what they fully are yet. Certainly at early on in the year, Penny didn't exactly know what the best way to kind of manage this roster was, be that how many different starting lineups throughout the season, you know, not even based on injury.
Yeah.
It just felt like there was a general
game
lack
to game.
Of,
I mean, what was it, like 13 straight games with a different starting lineup?
Yeah, and that was all to start the season. It felt like at the beginning there was a general lack of understanding of, okay, how should this team function to be at its best? We saw that on the court, and then just it didn't necessarily completely fall apart at that point, but we saw how it ended out through the American.
And I think the other thing I would say is with the losing streaks, it's he never felt like this team ever like learned how to win or get themselves out of it. We now welcome David Cobb, fresh off his CBS HQ performance, looking great in his sport coat as you're watching on the Ocho.
Bro, I was on real cable. I was on CBS Sports.
Oh, you're on network. You were on the Network of Stars?
Not only that, Miami of Ohio lost while we were live on the air.
Miami of Ohio goes down by 4. So we'll talk about that more in our college basketball wrap-up. But we're kind of going through the Tigers.
Oh, I know. I know what the topic is. Correct. The topic is.
And so the device that we've come up with is I've isolated some clips from Penny last night because, listen, if you want to do a 35-minute breakdown of a game that most people, I think, just would rather forget – oh, be my guest, but I don't think that's what any of us care about. And so let's get now more to the future and where this is headed. So Jason Munns of the Commercial Appeal had this little exchange with Penny asking him about what his off-season plans were. Like, I think Jason was kind of searching for, like, what are your order of operations? Like, what are your plans? This was the exchange.
What's your order of business now that the season's over? Like, what's the first three things on your agenda?
I would just say 1A, B, and C is just to get with Ed and just talk to Ed and then just go from there. We met last week. We'll meet again next week for sure.
Can you share what you guys talked about last week?
No. Sorry.
You want to share what you guys may talk about next week?
I really don't know until we get to that point. Not to be, you know, crazy or anything, but no, it's just, you know, we just got to figure things out.
The nature of the meeting last week, at least, was in just in general terms, was it?
No, it's just productive. Finishing strong, finishing the season strong. You know, we were on the edge of not even making the AAC tournament, so just finish the season strong. That was the message.
Okay, so a couple of things. It really wasn't testy. Like, if you watch the video, like, Munns knew that Penny wasn't going to be able to give, like, a real concrete answer, and I don't think Penny took offense to the questions. So there were two things that stood out to me. One, the nature of last week's meeting. So finish the season strong. If you want to kind of connect some dots, Gary Parrish over on his show at Grind City Media had mentioned last week that it would be important for the Tigers to not lose out. Need to win a couple games or finish strong. I think you can draw the connection there. Like, don't lose 10 in a row to end the season. Now, is it?
Yeah.
Now, I would also argue, is there really a difference between losing 8 of 9 and losing 9 in a row?
Well, that's like my whole thing, is this idea that what happened in the last couple of weeks was going to have some major impact on trajectory of the program and whether or not Penny might come back. Like, what could you have possibly seen in the American tournament outside of 5 wins in 5 days that would have altered the calculus in any way? Like, we've had this entire body of work over the course of this season to tell us that this team was a total failure. So outside of the miraculous run, like, what were we really hoping to get from the American tournament that would change it? It just feels like everybody's kicking the can down the road. Like if we were going to hire a GM, we should have done that a month ago, right? So it just feels like, you know, these conversations that Penny's alluding to they need to have already happened. It just feels like nobody really wants to assert themselves and make this path clear and bring clarity to what is currently a very messy situation.
Yeah, and I think the simplest explanation for that is that the decision is being driven more financially than it is based on anything else. Like, in the end, they had a decision of, did they want to eat the buyout? Did they want to pull the trigger? No, they don't. Or maybe no, they can't. Maybe that's the better way to say it. But that's kind of the reality of the situation. And then I think the other aspect of it is the first part of the quote of, you know, what is the meeting going to be? Don't know. Well, it's clearly going to be, what is the future of this program? And what is the vision going to be? Like, what I think the one definitive that you can say right now is Penny Hardaway is going to be the coach next year. Unless this,
it sure
now,
feels like
unless
that.
I guess I could see this scenario. If Ed Scott has a vision of what needs to be done and Penny is vehemently opposed to that or wants to go against that, then maybe you come to a different decision. Like, I'm not saying that this is what Ed Scott's going to say, but for instance, Ed wants to see, you know, 3 new assistant coaches. Ed wants
right.
to
and
see.
And Penny says, no, I ain't doing that.
Correct. And, you know, something along those lines. I'm not saying that's what he's going to do before the audience jumps me.
No, I think it's a good hypothetical exercise. I think it makes a lot of sense to walk through what that meeting could look like, because that meeting is going to determine what the future of Memphis basketball is. And it very well may look exactly like what you're saying. Like, hey, retool the staff, get a GM in here, get a roster composition that has these parameters around it. Like, you know, and if you're a proud veteran basketball coach, you may not want your AD meddling or telling you how to run your program. And you may say, okay, if this is what it has to be, then I'm out. Right. So like, I think that's a totally valid, hypothetical scenario to walk through in this moment of the dynamics of that meeting could still, because like, as we all know, Penny doesn't have to do this. It's not like Penny is a career college basketball coach who has to subject himself to the desires of the athletic director. He doesn't need it financially. He doesn't need it career-wise. Some coaches, if they were to walk out of a meeting with an athletic director and say no to their ultimatum, it would kill their career. They would have, you know, but it doesn't matter. Like, there is no, like, if this kills Penny's coaching career, so what? Like, Penny doesn't want to coach anywhere else. He doesn't want to go. He's not trying to climb the ladder. He wouldn't be looking to go latch on at another program as a head coach or an assistant coach. So, like, I mean, it ultimately comes down to, what does Penny Hardaway want, and how forceful is the administration in trying to create the changes that they want to see? And if they are forceful enough on that, is there a chance that it drives Penny to say, thanks, but no thanks?
I don't know, because this is such a tough... Who has the leverage? Because remember, we talked about this a little bit last week with Jason. I could make the argument, as embarrassing as this season was, Ed's going in there with more leverage than you would think. However, as Jason pointed out, the leverage Penny's got, fine. Pay me the $6 million. You want me out? Like, if you want this is you want me out. And Memphis is kind of indicated, like, that is a hurdle. Like, is it climbing Mount Everest? I don't know, but it's clearly a hurdle.
So that adds a wrinkle to the hypothetical discussion then, because let's say the administration, Ed, whoever, makes these requests to Penny. All right, retool the staff.
The suggestion box.
Yeah, right. And Penny says, no, I'm not doing it. Then what? But no, I'm not doing it. And I'm not resigning. No, I'm not going to do that. So yeah, right, to your point. Okay, no, I'm not going to do that. So you can either let me do it my way, or you could pay me what you owe me, right? Like that could be the place that the conversation could get to that point, in theory. That's an unpleasant sort of situation.
I would actually argue that's kind of worst case. Because I think that involves no resolution. Now, do I expect it to get to that? No, I think Penny is aware that there's got to be some form of change, right?
Surely. We can all see it.
Okay, so this gets to the question of the GM, which is obviously going to be a huge part of the conversation. I was interested in this answer because Penny, I think, lays out, I don't know if I would say it's his vision, but it's certainly his interpretation of what a GM is. George, let's play that one.
I think just from understanding what GMs do around the country, they help you build a roster, they help you build a staff, they help you build everything and the believing and the buy-in of the kids that fit your system. I think a lot of these young men came in with their own individual deals and really didn't understand what Memphis basketball was all about, and they had to learn that when the season came about, and that's tough. You know, that doesn't bode well when you're an aggressive team. We're known for being an aggressive team. You get guys that are not aggressive. So again, waiting on Dane and PJ last year, we tried to make it work, and we felt like we had a good enough roster to win, which we did. But just the mindset just wasn't there.
So
I kind of agree with what he said.
No, I actually think there were two things that struck me. Number one, I do believe Penny needs a GM that puts the pieces together better. Like,
yes, absolutely.
I think Penny's a lot like a great songwriter or an artist that like has the vision in his head of what it's supposed to be, but sometimes getting it on paper or getting the finished product to be exactly what he hears or getting us to hear what he hears, there's a failure to communicate at some point. And so I think the other thing that struck me, though, is, and I never really knew how realistic this was, but you did hear a little scuttlebutt of, what if the GM reports to Ed? Based on these comments, I feel safe to say it's like, no, Penny's gonna pick the GM. The GM's gonna be someone either reports to Penny or it is not going to be some type of intermediary between the athletic director and the basketball coach.
Yeah, I think you're gonna struggle to find a good one. I think you're gonna end up with a yes man if that's the route they go, because no GM who's well regarded in the college basketball profession is going to hitch their wagon to the sinking ship that is the Penny Hardaway era right now. That would be career suicide. If you're at a decent job in any way right now, why would you leave? Why would you leave to go tie your fate to a Penny Hardaway regime that is coming off of this season?
I can see two scenarios. One, the scenario that you laid out, a glorified yes man from his orbit, from his circle. Like, I don't know whether or not it's, you know, maybe a Nike rep or, you know, someone that he is entirely comfortable with. The other option, and it's risky, but it might be the option that would work best. Young, hungry guy that goes, this is a shot. And I'm going to have the best budget in the AAC. And it's going to be someone that is job hopping.
Yeah, well, yeah, Wonderkind, right? Like a Zach Kleiman light, like a grizzly, or you know, like a Tigers version of the young up and comer in the industry, right?
Or even if it's like it's somebody that maybe views the GM path in college as their future, somebody that goes, all right, here's a shot, and
this person needs to have been doing their homework already, like. And it stands to reason they would, like, if they're already in this space.
Right.
That you would, but if you just go and hire, like, the local grassroots guy, not to say, like, that there's anything wrong with, like, the
I think Herb would do a good job.
Yeah, right, for sure. Like, there are people out there in the grassroots world who, like,
I don't,
could do
to
this
be clear,
stuff.
I do not think Herb wants that job. I feel fairly sourced on that.
But if you don't have, like, if you don't have the current kind of knowledge of the landscape, if you haven't been intentionally studying this, I'm sorry, but mid-March is too late to start. Like, mid-March is way too late to start. Like, you need to have already been, like, living, eating, breathing transfer portal targets for months at this point, and knowing who in the Big South and who in the Big West and who in the CAA is going to pop and hit the portal, who you can afford and know their price tag, know who their agent is. There's a lot to that, which is why you have to have a GM in the first place. When you're trying to coach a team and run practices and watch film, like, you don't, it's hard to do it all. I don't think it's a sign of weakness at all that Penny could end up in a situation here with a GM. I think it's a, you know, Jeffrey, it's a sign of strength, right? Like, we want to put a positive spin on it. Hey, I need help. Give me a GM in here. And, you know, but I shudder at the idea that it would be a yes man. And I shudder at the idea that it could be somebody who's not currently in this world, because I just think mid-March is going to be awfully, it's going to be an awful time crunch to try to get somebody in.
He needs to call in a favor with Sexton. Somebody from CAA, like that one, because Jim Tanner was not a roster builder, but
right, he's a money guy.
But he knows the world. Like, I do not want to make this seem like that I'm rolling my eyes at Jim Tanner, but my point is, like, Jim Tanner, I mean, it's the same argument. Bob Myers had never put a roster together.
Well, like, who would be Memphis's version of Jim Tanner? Like, the well-established industry professional with deep ties to the program.
He's running Murray State.
Ernie Kiper?
Or yeah. Mike Miller.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's probably true.
I'm not sure those are options.
Let bygones be bygones, man. You know, I think the hatchet.
I think they're running Murray State right now. Okay, so that brings us to the vision of the future and the roster. Here is what Penny had to say last night.
I imagine conventional wisdom would say that after a season like this, some people might want to rip the Band-Aid completely off and just start with the entirely fresh roster. But at the same time, you had an entirely new roster this year. I think a lot of people think that's part of why you guys were in this position. In the world where you're back, are there players on this team that you want to retain for next year?
I'm not really going to talk about that right now, but I think, you know, with having 14 new players a year before, I think that's probably about the same, to be honest, because Ashton has been here before, so it's basically like 14 new players. It's just to believe in the buy-in. You know, I really do believe that because last year's team believed in and bought in, but they had the leadership of Tyrese Hunter, Musa Cisse, Dane Danger. Those guys were leaders, and Nick Jourdain, and making everything work. And that's just the difference. So I'm confident that that can happen again. This was just a down year in all areas.
So what he meant, he is flipping that roster again.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Now, is it possible you could retain a couple of guys? Yeah.
Yeah, and but like, I'm not even saying he needs to bring back eight. I do think he needs to bring back three or four.
Well, what about, you know, he mentioned Ashton, boomerang transfer, right? Are there any boomerang transfers out there? I mean, hey, what's P.J. Haggerty going to do? I'm just saying.
I told you my theory on this. Listen, would they welcome P.J. back with open arms? Absolutely. Do I think P.J.
You'd be crazy not to.
Correct.
You would be crazy not to.
Do I think P.J. is a great player? I do. Do I think P.J. can just fix everything? No, I do not. Because we have now 3 years of evidence, and the year that he was at his best was a year when he had Tyrese Hunter sitting next to him to kind of start the engine. And that's the year that he becomes an All-American. And it's not just, oh, because he played in the American. They played seven tournament teams last year, and they were 5-2, and he was pretty...
I don't know if you got into it, Jeffrey, before. Well, I'm sure you have. I don't know about today, but this schedule? Oh, my gosh. Like, they're already putting together an unbelievable schedule for next year, which, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Like, if there's anything Penny Hardaway can do at an elite level, it's put together a really high-end schedule. But I'm already nervous for what that's going to look like.
Well, especially if our interpretation is correct in that he's flipping this whole roster, you could wind up in the same position that you're in this year, where I'm not convinced roster-wise this team was god-awful. Like, I think there were some... I think there were probably
There were talented players on it. Yeah. But it's, as he said, the buy-in and the like, sort of... I don't know. I hate that just, like, effort feels like a cliche, but, like, the buy-in and, like, the intensity. And then also, like, those are sort of theoretical concepts. We can just call it what it is. There were no shooters on this team. I mean, if you want a bottom line, what the difference was between last year's Memphis basketball team statistically and this year's Memphis basketball team, 3-point shooting. Like, this team could not shoot. Last
year's bottom line
shot it great.
Like, you can, if you want to watch a game and have the emotional reaction, by all means, do it. Last night really came down to both teams. Like, you go down the stat line, like, Memphis won the rebounding battle. Memphis at least won points off of turnovers. I don't know. Maybe it was like 12 to 11 in terms of actual turnovers. But it was just as simple as both teams made 22 shots. The other made 14 threes, while Memphis made five.
Like, you know who I saw make a three-pointer in person yesterday?
Were you in Nashville?
I was at Bridgestone Arena, and I see this LSU wing hit a three from the corner, and the PA guy goes, "PJ Carter for three." And I was like, "Huh,
could have been brought back."
I remember that guy.
Could have been brought back. Anything else? I mean, I guess you could also make the argument, though, if they're going the GM route, they're leaving open the interpretation of GM has a blank slate. So would it be recommended he brings back a few guys? Maybe, maybe not. Like, maybe you're leaving it entirely wide open to say whoever's going to be the GM wants to not have restraints.
Yeah. So looking at it.
And I don't think anyone signed to a multi-year deal.
Well, that's good. I mean, so Doug is out of.
I should emphasize think.
Doug is out of eligibility. Aaron Bradshaw is not.
Correct.
Of the guys who there were three players on this year's team that shot 34% or better from three. Curtis Givens, Ashton Hardaway, Julius Thedford. I mean, if you want to bring anyone back, those three kind of seem like the logical options.
Yeah. I think those are probably, I think those would be the most likely to return. But again,
yeah.
I also don't know, like, you know, I think like a lot of things, it's, you and I can sit there and go, they should bring this person back, but then it becomes the obvious question, at what cost?
Yeah, and do they want to come back, right? And
like,
yeah,
would I bring back, like, if Simon Majak wants to come back, I'd
for
be
free, sure.
I'd be interested enough, but like you said, I'm not getting into a bidding war.
No, I don't think he's somebody that you pay any significant amount for.
I also don't think it's a bad idea to emphasize the local guys.
I think it's great. I think it helps facilitate a connection with the
Correct.
City that
I
has
think
been
it helps,
missing.
Because he, one of the big aspects that he mentioned earlier was the lack of identity, and those are guys that could help establish a culture.
Well, you think about it early. I mean, they weren't making the NCAA tournament when A-Lo and Tyler Harris were kind of
the engines,
the faces of the program. Yeah. Now, I also think it's interesting. What's this narrative, Jeffrey, you tell me about the Memphis guys weren't treated well? I mean, I've seen some of this. I don't know if it was from Penny, but this idea that like Malcolm and Tyler Harris and Alex Lomax and some of these other local guys, like that they were treated well. I don't know like what that's about.
I don't know if treated well, but like, you know, A-Lo
you are under a microscope. If you choose to play University of Memphis, like as a Memphis kid.
A-Lo was always in that weird spot where he was never as bad as the haters thought, but he was also, like, he should have had the Andre Allen role. Instead, yeah, it was his role exactly. was always elevated.
Same build.
Correct. But it's like, he was never, he got a lot of the blame for everything. It was almost like, because people weren't going to go after Jaden, but A-Lo might as well have been Alex Hardaway. And it's like,
yeah.
You just focus all your attention of like going after the coach's son.
Yeah, that's fair. He profiled more like a really good backup
yeah.
point guard.
Like he had a role. He should have been on the team. All right, you've heard us say it. You've heard Penny talk. We want to know what you want to say about Tiger basketball. 901-445-0929. What do you want to say about the Tigers? We'll take your calls next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. We've heard what Penny Hardaway's had to say. You've heard what we've had to say. Now we want to hear what you have to say. Taking your phone calls, 901-445-0929. What do you have to say about Tiger basketball? We start with Jim in Millington. Jim, what do you have to say?
First off, the reason NIL came about was because players couldn't go buy a pair of blue jeans without the NCAA cracking down on them.
Or have a coach buy a hot dog.
Right. So what's the answer? Pay them $1 million. Overkill much?
No,
Penny's
I mean...
main problem, I'm switching subjects here. Penny's main problem is he's getting all these studs that have been the go-to guy at each high school they've gone to. And they have no idea what teamwork is. My suggestion is don't recruit anybody you think is going to be a one and done. Recruit the best three stars you can find that you think will stay there 2 or 3 years and teach them how to work as a team. That's what most of these problems come about, I feel, is it's, you know, I coached girls for a long time. Guys will grab a basketball and they'll say, look what I can do. Look what I can do. Look what I can do. But girls, you get them on the court, they'll grab a basketball and they'll literally say, all right, show me what you want me to do. And that is a huge difference. And, you know, if we can find some guys that are more along those lines instead of these prima donnas, we'd be in great shape.
No,
I love the show, guys.
Appreciate the phone call. I would say I'd meet him halfway. I would meet him in that.
Recruit some girls? Or
No. I think that would be a problem. I know lots of people that coached high school boys and high school girls, always thought coaching girls was better. Like, always. Said, you know, like.
Well, there's an opening at Memphis right now. Maybe we just reassign.
Hey, listen, there's a former great girls basketball coach that's available. Just got a job taken away from him at Auburn. Just saying. He could maybe dust off the old thing. But where I would meet him halfway is that I do think a big problem is the overall emphasis on talent.
Over fit, over scheme, over...
You need to recruit. Yeah. You got to recruit one or two guys. You got to recruit a couple of guys that can get a bucket no matter what. But, like, one of the guys that I'm not even convinced Penny really was, like, all that particularly excited about from the recruiting process was a guy like Nick Jourdain. But Nick Jourdain did a lot of grunt work, a lot of dirty work, and a lot of stuff that you need. Like, you can go after one or two studs, but, like, when the most important aspect of who you're recruiting is just how good was he in AAU, I do think that's a problem. Like, I think they need to recruit more role players.
Yeah, I think there was actually some truth in what he said.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do.
Yeah. You need those Jourdains. You need those. Even a Colby Rogers. Like,
sure.
He was primarily a shot taker, but he did that within the confines of a well-defined role.
I totally agree. All right, let's go to Joe in East Memphis. Joe, what do you have to say?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call, Joe.
Appreciate you calling in, my man.
I'm not a GM, but there is something about this team that, you know, when you get a bunch of guys coming from different schools, man, and like Penny said in his press conference, you know, these guys were pretty much individual players. Everybody is trying to be the man. But what Penny needs to do, and let me reflect on Memphis itself, is always good on recruiting at least two or three good guys from Memphis. Now, this Fred Smith guy, I think he would be a good fit for Penny. And I don't think with him playing in a small division school would give him an opportunity to kind of shine a little bit. But back to the GM, I would keep a couple of guys. Now, Aaron Bradshaw, he's kind of up and down. But you can't teach size. And you're going to have some size. And you need some stability. No leadership was on this team. No companionship. I mean, these guys yesterday looked like they didn't even care. So with that being said, I think Penny needs to restructure. Probably get rid of a couple of assistant coaches. Because I don't see any enthusiasm from them either, you know. I mean, it takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a coaching staff to make a good team. So, with that being said, I hope Tigers can, you know, revamp this thing, which I think Penny can. I mean, he's so determined. You can see it in his heart, man, in his eyes. This was very, very disappointing to him. And he would never do this to this city, put a team out there like that. He would never. But these guys didn't care. So if he can rebound, get him a good couple of pups. Fred Smith, I don't know about this Matavius Jackson guy. I haven't heard a lot about him. But, you know, I mean, let's look at the history. Vincent Askew, the white boy, these guys were guys that came in and stepped in the program, man, and made a change. Baskerville Holmes,
William Dempsey. I mean, if you just go on and on, I mean, there is talent in Memphis. You just have to get the right players.
Appreciate the phone call, Joe.
All right.
I mean, I do think this crop of high school talent, Cobb, is better. But now you just run into the issue of, like, in a year where it feels like you got to show real change and, like, can you really go that young?
Can you go young? Can you revamp entirely?
And I'm not saying, like, it's a bad idea, like, but then you also run the risk of, like, all right, well, we played the young guys, and then here comes Texas Tech. Here comes whoever.
Yeah, so I think the kind of the problem is I think everybody sees the program needs to be remade in a more stable way with more continuity and more year-over-year just stability. But you're in a position now where you're also your feet are against the fire because you have to be good next year, and you were just bad with all these players, so you feel like you have to flip it again to be good. I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, which is why I bring up Thetford and Givens.
No,
they are the
Memphis
kids.
I think there's
they did shoot it well.
I think there's also a legitimate question of, like, how stable of a program can you build in the American?
With Memphis's money, I think you can. Look, I'm going to raise this point
right
now.
You can build it definitely more with more stability than it has. I think that's fair. Okay. But I don't...
Look at Miami of Ohio.
Yeah.
They have better continuity than... And I know, look, they just lost. I get it. Like, we're all... The nation for the next 72 hours is going to be aflame over whether a one-loss Miami team should make the NCAA tournament.
Bruce
Pearl
will be on CBS's selection show on Sunday.
This is all I'm going to be writing and talking about for the next 72 hours, but it's not my point. My point is that team went undefeated in the regular season with a lot of continuity. Now, it's apples to oranges because, of course, Memphis plays a drastically more difficult schedule. And, I mean, it's not even in the same universe as Miami's schedule. But... That team brought everybody back except for one player. Except for one, they lost one guy to Georgia Tech. They lost one guy to the ACC. And they
to your point, like, I know they got knocked out in the Patriot League, but, like, Navy had more continuity than anyone and had a remarkable season. Like, it didn't end. Let's take these two calls and then, because we got to take a break. Let's go to Joe in Collierville. Joe, what do you want to say about the Tigers?
Hey, I just got two things. All right. Number one, is Penny has undoubtedly done a lot of really good things since he's been the coach. He's won some big games. We've had some fun seasons. But Tiger fans, it is okay to realize when it's time to make a move. I mean, I know it's hard because he's Penny Hardaway and what he means to this city and this program. But one NCAA tournament win in 8 seasons is not exactly what we want. And it's okay to realize or recognize that. Now, the other thing is Memphis as a program has enough resources and enough money to dominate this American Conference. This American Conference sucks, okay? This isn't the same conference that had Cincinnati, UCF, Houston, UConn at one point. Okay, all those teams are gone. Look at South Florida. Don't they have a brand new coach? Look at them. They just ran through the American, are probably headed to the NCAA tournament, and they've never had any relative basketball success that I know of, and they probably have way less money and resources than Memphis does. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Joe. Let's wrap up with Latrell. Latrell, what do you want to say about Tiger basketball?
What's up, guys?
How are you, my man? Hey, good to hear from you today.
Good to be heard from. Hey, I'm a big Penny fan. I am, without a doubt. And I think Penny did a decent job. But I think he has underachieved the 8 years he's been here. And the reason why I say that is because he had a lot of guys that was pros. He had a few pros on his team. And early on, and he did not excel or succeed like he should have, in my estimation. Now, he just said earlier in the year before the season started, this was his second best team that he's accumulated. And it doesn't seem like it. I don't know how he misjudged that or he overjudged it, but it seems to me that he had a guy, I remember Josh Minot,
yep.
that he
why not?
Played
yep.
for us. Might not. And this guy, I all the year, the whole year, I screamed, why isn't this guy playing enough? Why isn't he playing enough? In that Gonzaga game, I felt that he should have played in that second half a lot more because he was a game – he was a run stopper. He would get an extra rebound, put back. He made plays. And I just think Penny coaching staff as well, they got some good coaches over there, Andre, Mike Davis. But to have a turnover roster like you do consistently every year, it's not going to do any good. Just like you have turnover players every year, it's that's kind of tough. So my thing is the first thing he need to do is get Fred Smith, at least get that guy, and make sure you hold on to him, and then you start building veteran players as well. Don't just go out and just get all young players. Get some veteran players. And I think he needs some coaches that's going to be on his side. Like, I think they help. Penny needs to listen. He needs to let them have some ring to say stuff and to do stuff, because that Wake Forest game showed that obviously they was afraid to say something, or they didn't. Whatever, you dropped the ball as far as assistant coaches to help him out on the free throw shot of missing and all that. So I just think they need to get a lot of things together in that area. So there's no excuses for Penny. And if they say, hey, they need to move on, then so be it. Now, if he come back, I think they need to get him some help as far as GM, of course, that should happen. And I think a better year would be, Penny, listen to your assistant coaches and get some guys in here. If you're going to change coaches, get some guys in here that you'll be able to listen to and that you will listen to. You had Larry Brown, you had Mike Mitchell, all those guys, and they left. So, come on, let's make it happen, Tigers. Let's go.
Latrell, appreciate the phone call. Thank you.
No doubt.
That is, will thus conclude the phone call portion of the program. So, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. Anytime it's a bad season, you tend to like think everything is broken and it's a disaster. There's also the reality of sometimes like they got to hit on like three transfers and they'll be okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we can, or sometimes like sports gets overanalyzed, and I'm sure, you know, we're all guilty of it, myself included. But like, oftentimes it's like you hit on three guys, tends to work itself out.
Yeah. That's really important that they hit on them right now.
I do think what he needs to establish, though, is if he thinks the teams that he reaches the best prioritize toughness and tenacity, he needs to emphasize it more in the process than he does just solely how good of a recruit were you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Less about the